Welcome to Real Talk with Oribi, where we tackle real problems with real people and discover real solutions. I'm your host, Munasha Dzikiti, the Communications and Community Management Officer at Oribi Incubator. And for those who don't know us, Oribi is a nonprofit impact entrepreneurship incubator dedicated to driving social change in South Africa. Today, we are joined by a special guest panelist, our friends from Madagascar, our friends from PPI, as well as our friends from Saramba Initiative NGO. And we're also joined by Lucas Tatsi, whom you're very familiar with, who is our food systems lead and entrepreneurship growth lead. Before we dive into conversation today about how we can support social entrepreneurship, I would like to give our guests Cynthia Lapamy. Please help me with the surname.
Lapamyarshwa.
And Lou
Vouvray.
a chance to introduce themselves and to tell us more about their initiative and how they are connected to Oribi. So maybe we can start off with you, Cynthia.
So thank you for giving me the floor and thank you for welcoming us here. We are an organization led by women in Madagascar. We work to promote the gender equality and environment, but we have an incubator center like Empower Lab Innovation, and there we support the women, young, and people with disabilities to create their companies.
Amazing. Thank you, Cynthia. And Lou?
I work for PPI, which is kind of a cousin organization from Oribi. It's based in France, but we have an office in Madagascar that covers the Indian Ocean, and I manage the SEED project, which work with incubators in Madagascar, and Saramb Initiative is one of them.
Okay, amazing. And Lucas, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Lucas. If you're an avid listener of our podcast, you have seen me before, as Munasha has mentioned. So yes, I am the current food systems program lead as well as entrepreneur growth lead. Our food systems program is a 9-month incubation journey that includes a 4 to 6 week innovation challenge that is part of our selection process that kind of introduces people to social entrepreneurship as well as business modeling, amongst other matters. Very happy to be here.
Amazing.
Welcome awesome. To South Africa.
Yes, we hope you guys enjoy your stay here. So to jump straight into the conversation, we had a meeting before we sat down for this conversation here today. Around, I think Lou asked an important question around measuring impact. I think that can help us in terms of moving into the conversation about supporting entrepreneurs. And I was wondering, in terms of food systems, how does food systems at Oribi go about measuring impact when it comes to social entrepreneurs and the food systems entrepreneurs that we work with?
Super, great question. That is a very important thing that we care about, and that we are also currently in development and redefining and kind of strengthening how we measure impact, because impact can be seen as having outputs that should translate into skills development, but actual also tangible, if not also intangible, outcomes. So there is that kind of distinctive difference between outputs and outcomes, which is what I'm trying to get at. So part of our M&E process includes looking at the entrepreneurs and where they are in their journey, so doing a gap and needs assessment, and also visiting them and doing site visits. So we measure, because we're an online program, it is a little bit challenging sometimes to kind of, you know, measure the actual progress of the business on the ground at at a robust pace, right? So what we tend to do is we tend to have a lot of coaching sessions, one-on-ones with entrepreneurs, and as well as side visits, like I mentioned just now. And those give us the opportunity to actually measure some of the impact that the program is having, because in having conversations with the entrepreneurs, we get the opportunity to hear what the program has meant for them. What are some of the development areas that they need more assistance with as it relates to when they came into the program, and their gap, after doing a gap assessment, and how they've progressed throughout the program. So that's some of the ways that we're measuring impact currently. But we are looking to strengthen that, because there is a lot of work that needs to be done around kind of looking at the general matrix of the Sustainable Development Goals, and looking at how we could, you know, further measure that impact. So I'm really keen to hear more and learn more about how you guys measure impact as well.
Yeah, I would love for you to dive into that, unless you have some questions.
For the project itself, like the SEED project, maybe I should say a word about that. The SEED project is, like, in English would be support the entrepreneurial ecosystem to create decent jobs, basically. We are an incubator for incubators. We work toward capacity building for 20 structures that work with entrepreneurs. We do not work directly with entrepreneurs. So our impact is going to be the one that is toward those structures, not, for instance, the company that the final beneficiaries are going to create. It's going to be kind of like Lucas said too. It's going to be, for instance, the range of, how can I say that? How did the capacity actually increase within the incubators? Is the staff more performant, for instance? Do they have more activities? Is their business model more sustainable? So we are going to measure more on the means than on the direct results. For instance, it's going to be how many people we trained, how many activities we've led with them. Mm. And we also have a measure of impact that is directly dedicated to jobs created or sustained in the project. And it's not just decent job, it's jobs of quality. Mm. And we're working with a dedicated company that has developed a tool to actually measure the quality of employment, and it's based on a few a few criteria, and they also integrate the personal value given by the individual that is being interrogated to any of these criteria, because we do not evaluate the work, like the decency of the work, the same way. For some, it's going to be, for instance, the salary, it's going to be the hours, or it's going to be the work-life balance.
Yes. Yes, amazing. And I mean, we have Cynthia here who can also attest to, being a part of that measurement of success or successful incubation. And I'm wondering what some of your achievements have been in Saramba Initiative.
Okay, thank you for your question. We have a lot of achievements. Like I said during our session, actually, we are supported 50 women.
Wow.
To create their companies, like I said. Mm. And a lot of them to create the job for her. Mm. and to create the job for everyone, because in Madagascar, 52% are women, so it's crucial to create the companies, and it's crucial for Madagascar because it's contribute in the development in Madagascar.
Wow, amazing. So what I'm hearing is that women play a key role in the economy of Madagascar. Yes. Amazing. And well done on getting 50 women to be incubated in your program. That is a massive achievement. I can attest to how difficult it is to try and, you know, bring in applications. So yes, I think that is very commendable. Yes. And yeah, Lou, I'd love to hear more about the challenges that your entrepreneurs are facing and how you guys have been able to navigate these challenges.
The entrepreneurs?
The incubators.
We like two different, but even though they're different categories, many of the challenges are kind of the same.
Okay.
Cynthia will have much more to say than I. I think about that, but I can maybe say a few words. Well, there's the money, obviously.
Right.
Same question for everyone. Entrepreneurs struggle to raise funds, especially when they're women, especially when they're young women, especially when they're young, handicapped women living in rural areas, you know, like intersectionality, of course. Incubators face the same issue. It's really hard to find a sustainable model when you are an incubator to get to get money from your services or to get fundings from donors, international donors, on the long run, because they're not just like conducting activities for 3 years. Usually they want to last like way longer. So we are helping them to secure longer term fundings. We are helping them to extend maybe the portfolio or the funders. We are helping them to develop new activities that they can get revenues from. That's one of the big challenges. Another one would be maybe to the economy of Madagascar is what it is. It has its flaws, obviously, and it's difficult also to get specialization. For instance, we can see that there are many incubators on the globe that are going to be specialized, for instance, in digital incubation. It's hard in Madagascar to have one specialization because you have to be agile to get like different profiles, to get different partnerships. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to get to the, like, if you're not specialized, it means that you have to know how to work everywhere, and it's obviously hard.
Right.
And because the funding are
limited,
right. They don't get like as many employees as they would like to. So lots of volunteers working in incubators, giving their time freely. So it's noble, but you know, you have to get bread at the end of the day.
Right. And you mentioned that it's particularly women and women in rural areas as well as disabled women that are struggling, particularly with finding or getting funding. Perhaps you and Cynthia could give more detail around why that is. Why are women in Madagascar struggling to get funding or access to funding?
We can say there is a lot of challenges for the women rural entrepreneurship because, for example, in the financing, the infrastructure is limited, and the climate change in Madagascar, and about the financing, there are not institution financial to financing the activities for human.
Okay.
That's the one. Instead, two, for example, in Shalamba Initiative, there are not the finance to financing the activities for human. Mm. So it's a big challenge for us.
Okay, so there are limited social impact-focused funding opportunities in Madagascar. Is that correct? Okay.
I didn't get that.
I'm wondering if what Cynthia is trying to relay is that there are limited social impact funding opportunities for women in Madagascar. Would you agree, or have you experienced it a little bit differently?
There are lots of fundings, and for instance, the program that we are, like the SEED project, is funded by the EU, which is really working toward bringing women to, like they're working toward bringing jobs to everyone and develop the economy, but they are really keen into like getting women in particular to get to create businesses. But It's maybe not as fast, for instance, for the financial institutions.
Okay.
Because when you want a loan, it's the case in many countries in the world. When you get a loan, you need to have like assets to assure the loan.
Okay.
And as a woman, you don't often have access, for instance, to the land that is going to be a guarantee or to the cattle. So that's a big barrier.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And Lucas, what are some of the challenges that you have seen with our social entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I would say, you know, kind of similar to the challenges in the rurals of Madagascar, from what I'm understanding. That's the particular context that you were sharing about, Cynthia, right? Mm-hmm. So, infrastructure challenges as it relates to, you know, access to proper physical infrastructure, and as well as, you know, competing interests and limited financial resources are some of the challenges that we see with social entrepreneurs. I was actually reading an email from one of our entrepreneurs this morning where he's literally asking for an emergency relief fund where he needs assistance because he's been invited to participate at a networking event that can be very impactful in terms of expanding their network. But he's asking for like, 2,000 Rand? And he is a volunteer in the farm that is running at the secondary school based in Johannesburg. But, you know, with all the other challenges that aren't controllable, such as climate change, you know, they have experienced a bit of a delay in terms of their produce. And so even having enough produce that can sustain the business has been a bit challenging, because now they can sell the produce that they, the limited produce that they have within their farm, and they still have to pay salaries. They still have to take some stipends, at least to eat bread. Like Lou said, you know, everybody has to eat. And those are some of the challenges. And, you know, our social entrepreneurs have a really good heart. And, you know, the heart element sometimes is what pushes them to want to make an impact in their communities. And oftentimes that heart element kind of takes a little bit away from having proper business acumen, which is what I also wanted to mention a bit earlier around some of the measures of impact that we have within our program. Because our program has so many different components, well, not like a lot, but there's multiple interventions that we have. So over and above the site visits, as well as the one-on-one coaching, we've got master classes, work together shops, peer-to-peer learning spaces. And interestingly enough, the networking events that we host have a measurable outcome, or yes, a measurable impact outcome that we learned from this year, where by attending the networking event and having access to like-minded individuals that operate in the food systems, some of the entrepreneurs were able to be inspired to pivot and kind of, you know, get into doing other types of activities within their business. So one example of that is a guy who came in with a restaurant idea, and a restaurant idea that looks at providing more nutritious, healthy food to the township economy that he lives in. The township economy, or township areas like the rurals, well, they call it more like peri-urban today. And he attended our Changemaker Social in March in Johannesburg, and literally pivoted. He stopped trying to go directly to starting the restaurant and was like, you know what, let me learn how to farm. And now he's starting a couple of community gardens in his community. And, you know, because he's now doing different activities, people are like, oh, what are you doing? Why are you collecting banana peels? Why are you collecting, you know, that package for oranges?
Right.
He actually made his own net out of the in Setswana they call it khedzi. I don't know, a scrub thingy.
The orange nets.
Yes, the orange nets.
Okay.
There we go. I was looking for that word. And so, like, you see, he's innovatively moved from, okay, I have an idea of wanting to start a restaurant, to, okay, let me actually learn how to farm and grow the food. And ultimately, you know, I will then sell produce and get to starting the restaurant, right? And even now they are pivoting even further, because they opened up another enterprise whereby they are now doing seed propagation as well, selling seedlings, because a lot of community members want them to start food gardens for them. And all of this came out of them being inspired by attending a networking event.
Right.
You know, But there are challenges that they face, obviously limited resources, limited time, and competing interests, like, you know, Cynthia mentioned.
Yes.
And yeah, that's, it's actually tough for the marginalized communities. But the challenges, I would say, generally can be a little bit better resolved with better business acumen, which is where I think a lot of social entrepreneurs struggle.
Right.
In a nutshell, basically. Because when they focus a lot on impact, then they kind of forget about the business side of things. How do you structure a business? You
know, okay, so they lose sight of business development.
Yes,
okay.
And more particularly financial management. Because, you know, if you do not have the... And it's in, like Lou said, it's in a lot of the different countries. If you want to get access to funding, more particularly through the traditional banks, and even in South Africa right now through other financial solutions, it's a lot of debt. And they take you through a credit review, and they want to see what's been happening in the business. Do you at least have a cash income, cash flow? And even if you don't have annual financial statements, they need to at least see that there's money coming into the business, and this money has been spent on the business, and there's a little bit of a financial sustainability element to it, which is one of the challenges, I would say, core to one of the biggest challenges that social entrepreneurs face that I've come across.
Okay. I mean, I personally don't get to engage in the way that you guys get to with the entrepreneurs in terms of educating them and supporting them. But when I do get a chance to maybe rub shoulders with them at events, or when I do get to meet them, it really does sound like the funding and resources issue is a massive challenge. I'm wondering what is being done, or what are you guys doing in your organizations to help with this challenge? Can we start with you, Cynthia?
So about these challenges, we focus on in our goals, like to support them step by step.
Okay.
In their projects, and we try to give them the different opportunities, like networking, like exchange, like masterclass.
Okay, awesome. And Lou?
I think I have a two ways in answer. Seed is part of the larger program, and another component is led by the United Nations, like UNCDF, which is dedicated to finance. They work with the financial institution to develop new like tools, maybe for young entrepreneurs in particular. So that's one side. And on our side, what we do is we work with, well, my answer is always going to be the same, often going to be the same. We work with incubators because the numbers that we have say that, for instance, people that get to finance institution and that have help from incubators are way more likely to get the help that they want, and the structures to be able to pay back and to not fall into a bad circle with debt, as Lucas said.
Okay.
So that's the most work we do.
Amazing. And Lucas?
Yeah, that's a big question. So there's, I would say, both internal and external interventions that we do. Internally, we, like, you know, just like similar to Cynthia, we run masterclasses, as well as, you know, expert training on financial management and financial literacy. And we get experts from other companies such as Sapient, which is one of the good partners that we have that runs masterclasses on finances. And not only do we have those masterclasses, but there's kind of, we try to focus a lot on the how can the entrepreneur practically apply the implementation of, you know, after you've learned how important financial literacy is, how do you now, you know, incorporate it into your business? So through the coaching that we do, We would then look at, okay, so what are your current processes? What are you, how are you currently recording, you know, finances? If it's very manual, which is some of the which is what we found a lot, where they have this book, that some people have this book where they write all the sales on a day-to-day basis. And it, as you can imagine, it can be inconsistent because on some days, life happens and then they don't write in the book. So you find that there's a lot of gaps. Some entrepreneurs even have cash, you know, transactions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very difficult to measure cash. So what we do is we try to, for cases like that, what we do is we try to also offer tools like, you know, templates around cash flow management, daily cash management. So we really try to work with the entrepreneur from where they are in terms of their financial management procedures. And yeah, that's basically what we do internally. And then externally, because we incubate entrepreneurs across the value chain of food systems, and not just that, but across the business development stages. So we look at people that are at idea, MVP, launching, and growth stage. There are some people that have you know, established financial management processes. So externally, what we do to kind of, you know, support with the funding element of things is we would partner with different organizations that actually offer, you know, funding opportunities or that focus on financing as a whole. One, two examples, I would say we successfully managed to partner up with about three organizations this year. But the problem with that is majority, actually all of them are debt financers. Mm. The only thing that we like about them, or not the only thing I would say, is that what attracts us to those organizations is how they focus particularly on the township economy, so the marginalized communities. And they focus on funding Black businesses, and they don't just offer up a loan. Mm. So the solutions that they have are things like asset-backed financing, where they would purchase equipment for the entrepreneur, and or, you know, offer up a working capital for whatever invoice discount or purchase order that they have. Because, well, to actually share a little bit more on what a purchase order is, so some suppliers of services and products, they require people to like supply the service or the product now, and then they only pay you like 30 days or 60 days, even 90 days later. Okay. So in that case, these organizations would step in to actually give the entrepreneurs capital to keep running the business. Mm. And yeah, so with the entrepreneurs that have those established financial management processes and they have funding limitations or funding needs, we would then we would link them up to these partners, and, you know, they'd go through the process and see if they can get the funding. Like, okay. Yeah. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, one of our entrepreneurs actually managed to successfully scale her business by the purchase of equipment that allows her to actually make more polonies, more sausages, and start to supply the local butcheries, etc., etc.
Okay, amazing. And then I don't know, maybe I want to make room. You want to add?
I think what's really important about what Lucas said is that entrepreneurs have really different profiles, and they need like different kind of help depending on their profile, whether the activity is formal or informal. Sometimes they need like big loans that are going to help them create lots of jobs. Sometimes they just need like a really small amount to like pursue a generating income activity. So it's really important for incubators like you, like Cynthia, to be a child with them, because they have such different needs.
Yes.
That's very true. Yeah.
That is absolutely true. And it, in terms of different needs, or on the conversation of different needs, I wanted to touch on the conversation of supporting particularly African women social entrepreneurs. I mean, I look at Sarambe Initiative and how you guys have managed to get up to 50 women entrepreneurs into your program. I think that's something that we struggle with when it comes to our food systems program. And you are mainly focused in the green and blue economy, you know, and we're working with the green economy. And it's been a struggle for us in terms of getting women into the program. I'm keen to hear how you've been able to achieve that. How have you been able to get so many women? How have you been able to get them and keep them in your programs?
In fact, there are processes to select them. Like, we can say three phases. The one we, how to say that, we make the, we share the application, like form in the, we dispatch the, like form in the area, mm-hmm. and after that, we collect this fish or form. After that, we select them, and sure. when we select, we pass in the training, like training of the entrepreneurship,
right.
Blue economic and green economic. After that, we coaching them about ideation, about how to manage a business like this, and after that, we have like the master class with mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. to share the different success stories, like how to women to lead and companies like this.
Okay. Yeah. Have you had any challenges working with women? Would you what kind of challenges? Maybe you could name a few.
We can say that, like Lucas said, mm-hmm. there are the different activities like handcrafts, agriculture, like fishing. So it's not easy to regroup this person or these participants, but we try to do the better of us.
Okay, awesome. And Lou, I'm not entirely sure in terms of the statistics for women in your incubation program. Have you had challenges with getting women into your program, or are you also succeeding in terms of retaining them through your program, and how have you managed to do that?
We're not working directly with entrepreneurs. We're working with
incubators.
But
yes.
It was important during the selection to have women-led incubators.
Right.
So we have a few, not the majority, but we still have a few.
Okay.
And we're working with them to get them to get more women as their beneficiary. So we have, for instance, we have a gender and inclusion expert that just joined the team, and his goal is going to be to make the program more adapted for the staff of incubators to be able to work as women, as youth, etc.
Right.
But also we work with different organizations and this expert so that incubators maybe can adapt their message when they do, for instance, awareness campaign, or when they do a entrepreneurship mindset campaign. And you need to have messages dedicated to women, to young persons, to rural entrepreneurs. So to adapt their message is it's a part of the work we're doing with them so that we can get more women entrepreneurs on board.
Mm. Amazing. That's fantastic. You actually touched on some of the next topic that I want to get into, which is sharing some of the best practices that we have had in our individual organizations that we feel have worked. Maybe I can start with you, Lucas. What are some best practices that have worked in food systems that you think would be valuable for?
I think the biggest one for us is communications and the channels that we use to communicate information. We're constantly learning how it is important to use channels that, you know, entrepreneurs engage with on a day-to-day basis. So we transitioned from focusing a lot not to say we actually got rid of that type of communication. We still do send emails to entrepreneurs on a weekly basis, but we are very active on WhatsApp. And we have found this to be better in terms of, you know, getting feedback from the entrepreneur, at least getting the attention of the entrepreneur, you know, and just particularly personalizing the engagement, which is something that I think WhatsApp has offered us the opportunity to learn how important it is. And I would say because of that, you can imagine it's a lot of work. We have about 24 entrepreneurs in the program currently, and we're engaging with them on different matters daily, every second day, and our WhatsApp is insane. It is really insane because then it's not just them, it's also, you know, other individuals that might be interested, like for example our alumni that might be interested in like an opportunity, or you know, people that sit in other groups that would like contact us, like direct message. So I would say that that's the biggest one that I would say is a best practice. But yeah, it's challenging, and I think I'm thinking, since we and I don't know, it's actually a thought that I'm playing around with. We're looking to see if there's a way in which we can incorporate AI into some of the messaging. So have like a chatbot. Look, it's not something that I'm saying we're totally gonna do, but I'm playing around with the idea because it kind of removes a little bit of the personalization. Even though I've started playing with Meta AI on WhatsApp, and you know, if you ask it the specific questions, it answers you. Other times it gives you like general information that isn't so curated, and obviously it doesn't know the person that's behind. So even whether you're gonna add an emoji because this person likes emojis, or you're gonna use like, you know, you're gonna be more animated in the communications, it's not something that I've seen that it does. But yeah, I would say a best practice is that communication channels.
Yeah, and I must say the food systems team does a great job in terms of maintaining communication with the entrepreneurs. I see how excited these entrepreneurs get when we go to site visits and how eager they are to showcase their projects. So I think communication has definitely been your strong suit there.
Yeah, no, we try. Definitely try. But I'm taking inspiration from that. Showcasing successful women that you guys do in the Sarambe initiative. I think that at the very beginning stages of, you know, application and running the forums can be something that that kind of, you know, encourages participation, or yeah, women entrepreneurs to apply and actually get into the program. I've just, for us, it becomes then how do we retain the engagement after that?
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
With all the competing interests that women face today.
Yeah. Awesome. And Lou, do you have any best practices from your organization?
Well, it's a bit connected to what Lucas just said. I think it's a bit basic, but creating an ecosystem and like keeping it active, whether it's like local. We encourage always incubators to work together on a regional level, on a national level, and what we're doing here today, international. We are another component of the program is like animating a community for the entrepreneurship ecosystem in Madagascar, and I think it's really important to have that and to share best practices. And for instance, Luca is talking about WhatsApp. We've heard that before, like yesterday and the day before, and I mean, WhatsApp is such a common tool, but we haven't used it that much in the program. And I'm just like, why not? Just talk to the people that do a work similar as yours and learn from them. Right. There's plenty of space for everyone, I think.
Yeah, true. And yourself, Cynthia, what are some best practices, or what are activities that you have been doing in your organization that is working? What are some things that, some advice that you have for things that have been working in your organization?
Yeah, for Sharon Bay Initiative, we can say we practice to include women, human, and a person with disabilities. It's crucial when we wanna to develop the country. So what I mean, it's crucial to include human, women, and person with disabilities when we're gonna to develop the country or the economic in the world. So as for me, it's the best practices this because it's crucial when we can use when we gonna to develop this area.
Absolutely agree. I was mentioning earlier that in our programs, I don't think we've had anyone with disabilities that has been a part of our programs, and we now need to sit down and think about, is that because our program is exclusionary? Is there something we need to do to make sure that the environment is safe for them to participate? Because I think people with disabilities are incredibly marginalized, especially when it comes to accessing economic opportunities. So it's absolutely important that we start looking at how we can be more inclusive towards them and how our programs can cater to them. So yeah, thank you so much for that. And since you're here in Cape Town and you're visiting, I'm wondering what kind of partnerships you guys are looking to make.
All kind, really. Like, we are two different organizations, even though we work toward the same goal.
Right.
So we're not really looking for the same things, I guess, with this trip. The main reason we're here is because there's this forum on women, African women in innovation and entrepreneurship. So the idea is to get to know people that work in these areas, whether they are incubators, whether they're like NGOs, like PPI, for instance, or they are also funders, people that we can maybe have projects that are in different countries or in the same countries, but like develop ties, learn from, as I said before, like learn from people that are doing things that are similar from us or that have a different approach to what we're doing, and that it could be like really instructive for us to think differently, to get better and to be of, better impact. We started this podcast talking about impact. Maybe we're going to close it that way.
Yeah. Amazing. I think that is an amazing reflection of just how the Pulse and Group SOS network functions when it comes to collaboration. We are big on collaboration. And I think I'm starting to like saying this African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. Yeah. And yeah, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. And that's it for today's podcast of Real Talk with Arebi. A massive thank you to our guests, Lou and Cynthia, for sharing their insights and experiences. We hope you found this conversation as inspiring and as enlightening as we did. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, leave a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @RB_South Africa to stay updated on upcoming episodes and the latest news from RB. And also, before we leave, our open call or call for applications for the food systems incubation programs for 2025 are now open. Check out our social media as well as our newsletters to stay up to date and not miss out on this opportunity. Thank you.
See you on the other side.
Bye-bye.
Nice.